Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Scout Smith, and this is Down South and Dirty with Scout Smith and Stacey Hopkins in the house. We got a very interesting show today, but first, let me tell you, Stacey will not be on the show with us today. She's under the weather. She was in the hospital yesterday, so everybody who are friends of the show, friends of Stacey, let's send our prayers and positive energy in her direction so that she can make a quick recovery and be back to her normal self, because yesterday she took some pictures and posted them up on Facebook. She was not looking like our Stacey Hopkins. So we really want to send some prayers and positive energy in her direction to encourage her. And we down for you, girl. Get better. Anoa will be on at a quarter after at 2:15. And we also are going to have a special guest host today. She's been with us before. Kenyette Barnes, the legislative empress, will be on with us today, helping us go through the national convention. So she will be on at the 2:30 point of the show. So let's go ahead and get into the show. Democratic National Convention. Now, we have some very interesting contrast that we're going to be looking for in relation to the National Convention that was held by the Republicans last week, which had this very staged, contradictory, hypocritical, dark cloud that just kind of permeated it. I tried to watch 2 or 3 days worth of that stuff, and by the time it got to Thursday night and listening to Trump, I couldn't do it anymore. I mean, I actually couldn't sleep because just thinking about what the possibilities of a Trump presidency would be. So I was sitting there coming up Friday, be like, okay, whew, we got to do better. Democrats, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. And then what we get this email scandal. I've seen it before. For those of you here in Georgia, I remember the email leak that took place in 2014 from the Nunn campaign that basically spelled out some of the stuff that they was planning on doing, and everybody went, oh my God. This, then, the other, we expected for folks to really be just upset, and they wasn't. Wondering how this is going to affect the DNC and the Clinton campaign going forward is going to be something we're going to have to watch, because if you was watching the State of the Union this morning, then you watched Senator Sanders talk about it, and he's been talking about this for quite some time, saying that he felt like, and we all kind of knew, particularly if you were members of the party, we all kind of knew that the deck was stacked against us. And this is the problem, I think, that people are having going, that we're talking about party unity, but at the same time, we're still not seeing what we are going to need as Democrats to bring this together, because as it's been stated, polls show 40% of Democrats, 40% of Sanders supporters, 40% of Sanders supporters plan on not supporting Hillary Clinton in the general election. And we kind of need those numbers, that number to shrink, but we definitely don't need it to grow. And a lot of things that are taking place, particularly when we like the platform committee thing that was going down in Orlando, that kind of ticked folks off. And then you have this email thing, which is even more ticking folks off because it's kind of proving the things that we said the whole time. And you got folks like me who are members of the party, you know, considering themselves a party loyalist, who is a Sanders supporter, who very much does not want to see Donald Trump as president and is attempting to do what Senator Sanders has asked us to do, which is to stop Trump and vote for Hillary Clinton. And we have some issues going on with trying to convince folks this when this type of stuff is continuing. You know, it's going to be hard to convince people who this is their, particularly those individuals, this is their first time coming across into politics, because I know there's a lot of young men and women who are marching right now in Philadelphia, and you can go on Facebook and you can see the live reports from Susana Perez and Alexa Vega and Daniel Handley and all of those, Kip Carr and Erica Pines and all those wonderful Bernie delegates that are, and Gretchen Quartermain, and all of those wonderful Bernie delegates from the state of Georgia, which are up there right now. I think, you know, a couple of them are in route still, but these are the people that are on the ground and up in Philly right now. They're going to do their best job, but particularly for the younger ones, this is their first time playing around and getting really into politics. This is their first time. You know, this is their first real foray into the mix, which is the silly season of politics. And it's kind of disheartening for them because, you know, it's like, this is what you guys do? This is crummy. They have more colorful words than that, but, you know, I'm trying to calm down with my profane language. But which will probably, that promise will be broken before the show is over, I'm sure. But they have problems trying to stomach what they're seeing. Now, for folks who've been around like me, who've been around since the Obama campaign in some form or fashion, you know, we've kind of just grown into this situation, and it still doesn't make it feel any better because there's things that we've constantly talked about that needed to be reformed in the party, that needs to be changed in the party, that needs to be changed in America. And I still fundamentally believe that the Democratic Party as a whole, as an entity, in its spirit, at its soul, is still for progressive change, you know, unity through diversity, freedom, liberty, equal opportunity. I still believe those things are true with the Democratic Party. However, we have an apparatus that is attempting to put people in place to push forward those ideas that has become drunk on wanting to win and winning big and making history when they win, and will do anything to make the numbers look right. And that is the problem. We see time and time again, which is just about winning. And it's about winning with the folks that we believe are our leaders. If you look at the bench, particularly here in Georgia, we don't have a really deep depth chart in which we can just snatch promising Democratic officials and candidates up to throw at, you know, the Republicans and get this stuff to stick on the wall for a victory. This is one of the reasons why, because we're so busy protecting incumbents, and incumbents have a difficulty with accepting and building up a bench below them because they don't want to be challenged. You know, you can't spend 20 years, 15 years, 10 years in a seat, and when their seat comes open, it's like open season. You've never really been challenged, this, that, and other. And the parties kind of allowed that to go. We see that coming from the top because we were even told that the superdelegate system and the way things run was meant for insurgencies to be put down. But every once in a while, to grow, you need an insurgency. You need, in nature, we see mutations in species that allow them to better survive in the environment. Because if you don't adapt and you don't evolve to the environment around you, your species will become extinct. This is where we're at today with the Democratic Party and including the Republican Party. But they are making an evolution. It might not be the best thing in the world for all of us, but they're attempting to make a evolution. They went from the John McCain's, the Mitt Romney's of the world, Ronald Reagan's, the Bush's, to Donald Trump. They made it was a major evolutionary jump. Whether or not it is going to provide them with a victory, but it has reinvigorated their party. Because there has been growth in that party. We cannot lie. Because they have taken, still we have to realize that the white population in this country is still the majority kind of population, and the voting group that is growing in the Republican Party is white. White men. This is what Trump is counting on to win. We in the Democratic Party are going to have to find some kind of way to stop doing what we're this destructive backbiting, backstabbing motions that we do. We even see it locally in the Atlanta area. When you see the tactics that are being, when they talk about using race and religion. We see it with Sam Bond-Sutton going after Steve Bradshaw, the use of race. I mean, we've seen it in other places in Georgia where dark skin and light skin has been made an issue. And that's just amongst the African-American population. We've seen it in many times in which, you know, we have taken and wanted to use race, gender, religion, things that are very personal and innate to what makes a human being up as attack points instead of sticking to the issues. Because at the end of the day, the fact that you are African-American doesn't, or a white man or a white woman, doesn't inherently make you better at policy. The fact if you're a man or a woman does not make you better at affecting policy. The fact if you're straight or homosexual does not make you better at affecting policy. Whether or not you're a Christian, Jew, Hindu, Sikh, Muslim, atheist, of any religion does not make you better at affecting policy. We need people in office who are going to affect policy because policy makes laws, and laws is what we live by in a nation that is governed by laws. And we allow sophomoric issues to take precedence over the real issues. Because really, to tell you the truth, what bathroom somebody goes to, who they sleeping with, whether or not you want to keep a child that you conceived or not, really, that's, and you know, most of those things are premised somewhere in religion. That's between you and your God. If you know you and your, if you and your God can come to some kind of reconciliation, that's really not none of my business whether or not you go to heaven or hell. I can talk to you about it, but it's not my business. I can't legislate you go to heaven. I can't legislate you going to hell. But I can legislate through my vote or running for office and picking people to represent us properly, we can legislate things that will change our lives, like a living wage, building better infrastructure that will bring better jobs, better health care, better education, you know, common sense gun safety laws, not gun control, gun safety, because we're not going to get rid of guns in America. But these are the things that we should be concentrating on in the Democratic Party, but instead, we got people in the party who are sitting back in their little emails trying to figure out how to stop somebody from getting in office. And this is just not at the national level. We see it at the state level. We even see it at the county level. Now, sometimes, yeah, you got some fools that are running. They don't truly represent what the party represents. They don't. They should have not been allowed to run as a Democrat, so the party is kind of scared of. I've seen that situation personally where we've had people that were running that did not represent the values of the party, and we could not support them. We couldn't. We didn't speak against them. We just didn't help them. That I understand. But when you have somebody whose values match up with what the values of the party is, when you have somebody who is a good and honest person, who is truly trying to help the people, we stay neutral. We just don't get in it. Like the party is supposed to, until we have a nominee. And we've gotten into this bad habit that has been placed upon us for at least two or three cycles, in which we have been forced to pick sides. And the thing is, it's against our bylaws to pick a side. But we've been forced to do it. So once, particularly if the leaders are the ones who do it, it makes it pretty much everybody else. It's a foregone conclusion. If we sit on our hands and we believe in something else and we don't say that, then we got a problem. And that's what's going to happen this week at the National Convention. We're going to get some fight back. So we really got to work on that. We have to do some things that are going to be hard in the decision-making process of making our party strong again. It's going to lead to, there's going to have to be some replacement of some leaders. There's going to have to be some changes. And it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be hard. Some folks' feelings are going to get hurt. And that's going to be difficult, because there are people who we have as friends. And we need to stand that sometimes we've lived out our usefulness, or our time, our season is up. And we got to do better. This is what it comes down to. We got to do better. We have some monumental issues that was shown out of these emails. We having some technical difficulties here. Hopefully we'll get a Noah Chang on here in a moment to talk about what's going on in the Twitterverse. But that is fundamentally some issues that we have with this email thing. I mean, it bothers me more than anything else that I've seen, because, like I said, I saw it in 2014 here in Georgia, and now we're seeing it again. And another something that's connected to this, you know, we want to place blame, and I'm hearing this thing about a so-called Russian connection. I mean, really? Now, don't take me wrong. Is it far-fetched for a foreign government to want to kind of influence the elections of another nation?
Yeah. We've watched how the American media, and I'm sure the American government, has had people talk to folks in other countries when they were going through certain situations. I know where when Britain just was voting for BritX, that we had an opinion. We had people lobbying. We even probably had people consulting the different groups on how to win their particular point based on what we wanted, either as a business situation in America or from a national standpoint. And I'm sure we have folks who do the same thing as, you know, it's just natural. We're dealing with a global situation now, whereas particularly America is still seen as the world's lone superpower. You want to either see it strengthened or weakened according to what your position in the global community is. So it wouldn't go bad for me the Russians doing it, but it also kind of precludes the point that we don't think that there could possibly be a fifth column in the Democratic Party that kind of says, you know what, I'm sick of this shit. I'm telling. It just could have been that simple. Could have really just been that simple. I'm telling. So that has been big. It's been crazy. Don't know how this is going to affect what's going on. We're about ready for Noah to come on here in a second. We kind of think we done figured out this is one of the great things about being live, is that you learn how to deal with a lot of different technical difficulties and different other things that are going on. You know, and then we also have families and things are going on time-wise and whatnot. But here she is.
Hi, Scout. Hi, everybody. Apologies. I lost track of time, and we are doing, Progressive Army is doing DNC streaming of some of the rallies and stuff going on today, and I had to hop on real quick and help out and pitch in, and then I got off and started talking to my son and lost track of time. But what a week. We are back in full effect. This is pre-convention, you know, chit-chat, down south and dirty. Thank you so much for letting me join in, Scout. I always appreciate you. Shout out to Stacey Hopkins. Much love and many blessings to her. Sister's been fighting and traveling, running so hard. Can't wait to be back on the line with her and in action, hopefully next weekend. But social media. I'm going to have to find a new name for this little segment because Burn Treatment, you know, might still work. Who knows? But social media has been wild, right? Like, we what's really, really cool right now, we have all these rallies going on, and we've seen this a lot over the past several months. The use of Periscope. I see Scout has started going live with Facebook Live now, too, to give y'all little messages here and there. But it allows us to deliver content, you know, so easily, so quickly, and so efficiently. So we have people on the ground in Philly. There are people in Washington. There are people communicating with us from different rallies all over the place through their phones, through Periscope. And it's great. And we get to see kind of what's going on. We get to see something when you have outlets like Down South and Dirty, like the viewership provided by Progressive Army. When you have stuff like this, you get an insight into the world and activism that you will not get from mainstream media. You know, because we all give it to you raw with no spin. And that's just, I just want to say a shout out to everyone who's really delivering good content and making it happen through the use of social media. We saw another charge, just keeping it really general for a moment there, of Twitter and Facebook kind of censoring the DNC leaks hashtag, right? The DNC leaks, WikiLeaks dumped some emails. You know, just 20,000 emails the other day that kind of confirmed some of the things that we who supported Senator Sanders already felt was happening. But the narrative, so there's been a battle kind of between folks, like, it doesn't really matter, it's not that big of a deal, the only thing that matters is Trump. And while I understand where people are coming from, like how this is a distraction, I understand that idea, but I think when we talk about the sanctity of our democracy and what we're really supposed to be trying to protect here, when we look at some of the high levels of interference and not just collaboration, because you're supposed to be impartial. You know, the actual, in some ways, impermissible cooperation that has happened between the DNC and only one party, right? It raises questions and concerns about the competency of leadership, and how can we trust people to do the right thing going forward. So I understand that there are some people out there who think, okay, we don't need to be having that conversation right now, but the question is, when do we have that conversation? Are we going to have it, you know, between November and January, you know, our inauguration? Are we going to have it in the first 100 days? Are we ever going to have it? Because we're just now really beginning to have it with President Obama, and he's almost out of office. So when do we begin to have it, and when do we really begin to, like, start setting things in change? So it's really great being connected with folks on social media to see kind of the different range and ideas and stuff where people are at. But there is this huge divide. Even people who are kind of like reluctantly saying I'm with her, and people who are firmly, you know, there's a huge divide. Because even people who say, okay, I guess I'm with her, they kind of affirms everything we knew. And there seems to be consensus that Debbie got to go. It's not enough that Debbie, you know, folks that have been following the news, Debbie watching the show, she's kind of been pulled back from the convention, kind of as a response to the backlash. That's not good enough. Debbie has to go. And it's not just Debbie that has to go. I mean, we really need to get back to the values of the party that supposedly make this the great party, the good party, so to speak, right? Because a lot of things have kind of gone askew. And not just in this election cycle just brings it out. But you know, so social media, like, everyone's buzzing, of course. Well, not everyone, but a lot of people are buzzing with the DNC leaks, but also what it says about our media and how biased the media is, and how controlled the media is by mainstream media is by certain special interests. Again, you know, I can admit to you when the candidate I prefer is wrong. I've said it many a times. I've gone off about Bernie Sanders being wrong and things that he has said or his staff has said that I do not like. You know, but there seems to be this inability within mainstream media for that same type of balance and unbiased, you know, reporting the same way you can get when you have independent. I mean, independent means we're broke, but, you know, independent also means that we can shoot it to you straight with no chaser and not have to hold back. So that was an interesting conversation that's been happening, of course, across social media. And, of course, you know, Dems and Philly, DNC convention, there's so much that's going on. There's so much going on related to the convention itself, like actual convention activities. We have delegates from all over the country. I'm so proud of people who were able to raise the money and actually get there, because this is, like, time-consuming. This is a big commitment. It's a big commitment, you know, physically, emotionally. You know, it's 100 degrees in Philadelphia. It's hot. It's humid. And people really put it on the line to be able to be there, to take and stand their part. And I'm really proud of folks who were able to do that. And some folks are still trying to raise money, even though they're there to kind of help them eat, which is huge, too. Like, people do need to eat. They're doing their part and stuff. And if we say we want governments and processes of the people, then we've got to kind of dig in our own personal coffers and help provide that and make that happen to the best we can. Because even giving somebody $5 helps. You know, that's, I don't know, they're in Philly, so I don't know what $5 will buy them, but, you know, $5 will definitely help. But there's a lot of news. You know, of course, the other big news was that, you know, Kane was announced Clinton's vice president. There's been a lot of back and forth between, you know, folks stolen his virtues while others are very, I guess, you know, clear that for them, he just reinforces, you know, Secretary Clinton. It does not actually add anything to entice some folks. And there's debate going on about that. But there's a lot going on right now. And I just think that people are kind of understanding how to use their presence as leverage and as a tool for education and conversation. And that's kind of how we need to keep it. We need to keep it driving, you know, the movement, as no matter what you decide to do, who you decide to back, where you decide to go, we got to keep it driving and moving forward. We got to keep the momentum going. And again, the digital stuff is great, but we got to pair it up with other action. So if you personally can't do action on the ground, then team up with somebody else or some other group that is able to do it too, because that's the missing component. We definitely need a connection between people who are doing the digital stuff and people who are actually on the ground working. But social media is kind of wild. I mean, it's always going to be, I think it's going to be kind of wild. It's going to be kind of wild all the way through the first 100 days, I predict, no matter who's in office. But it's really interesting seeing even the comparisons between Pence and Kane right now happening. You know, And we'll see how this all plays out. We'll see how if this boosts. We'll see if this changes the dynamic any. But it's definitely going to heat up, particularly by the time we get to our different debates and stuff. And we'll see what happens at the convention this week. I mean, Senator Sanders speaks tomorrow, as does the First Lady. FLOTUS, gotta love FLOTUS. I need Michelle. Michelle needs to have a show. Michelle needs to do something. Because, you know, for all of Barack's, you know, all of my issues with Barack Obama, I love that family. Like, I love that family. That family just makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside. And it's definitely, you know, nobody coming in behind them in terms of that feeling is going to be able to replace that or fill that void. It's going to be rough from that standpoint.
I don't know if you listened to the statement that Van Jones made last night, because he went live on Facebook and he talked about it again on CNN this afternoon about Kane. But he said something very interesting. He was like, you know, there's nothing really bad about Kane, but it's the fact that brown people, black and brown people, might be a little bit disappointed. Because you got to think about it, we done had 8 years of the Obama, and now we got Clinton and Kane. Now, you know, Kane, on the second, you know, as you start reading about him and learning more about him, he becomes a more interesting character, a more interesting VP pick, but he didn't cause excitement. He didn't bring us into this, like, you know, this place that we needed to be in just to get us there. But
right.
We got our co-host, our guest co-host is logged in.
Hey.
What's up, Kiet?
How are you, my love? How's everyone doing?
Good,
we're doing
how are you
fine.
Doing?
We're sitting here doing our little social media segment, and we were talking about the fact that the Obamas are leaving and how that – we were really hoping that the VP pick was kind of going to give us a fix for the fact that the Obamas were leaving, and hopefully at some point in time we can find where that's going to be. But
I am in the middle of Decatur Square, and I am sipping on something very yummy, and I am mourning the loss of Barack and Michelle. And I'm trying to wrap my mind around accepting Tim Kaine. It's sort of like, you know, it reminds me of that in-law, like your brother's, you know, wife. You know, you kind of don't, like, hate her, but you kind of ain't trying to, you know, be with her like that, but you got to find a way to just make it happen. That's my thoughts about Tim Kaine right now. I actually was thinking for Cory Booker. Remember, I've always said I thought it was going to be Booker. And, yeah, that would have made my entire life not happen.
Yeah. Booker or Castro?
Well,
and
even
Van
one
Jones.
Of the Castros. I mean, even one of the Castros or Perez, or I think my issue with all this stuff, you know, and how they're packaging him is, well, he speaks Spanish. And this is Richard Nixon. He's trying to give him the consolation prize. Well, he speaks Spanish. He was a missionary. You know, like I said earlier, some commentary I was doing. He speaks Spanish. He actually delivered a speech on the House floor. He introduced legislation completely in Spanish. It was like in 2013. He speaks Spanish. He goes to a black Catholic church, and his kids go to public school. And what bothers me with those attributes being pulled out, yeah, these are interesting tidbits, but it's almost like it's the heat off the criticism, because it's not just so much that about missing the Obamas and such. It's also that black and Latino voters deliver such a crucial advantage in these presidential elections over Republicans. And, you know, all throughout the primary season for that ticket, you know, that was like, oh, you know, it's because of, you know, the people of color voters that she's winning and this, that, and the other. And it's just like, then we get to the vice presidential pick, and you did have, it's not that there weren't, people have said, well, she needed someone who's going to be ready against day one, ready on day one. And that reminds me of, you know, in 2008 when they kept saying that Obama was not. I'm like, that's code language for me, for you to disregard the viable candidates. I'm with you about Cory Booker. Cory Booker might have made me, like, kind of look a little like, maybe. Or even, you know, one of the Castros, as has been discussed. And a lot of people earlier on thought that's what was going to happen. It was going to be one of the two of them were being groomed to be her VP. And for Kane, I mean, it's interesting. I don't know that it actually really does excite people or provide anything, but I think what point that one of my friends made earlier was that it may not excite us, but it may excite people who are Republicans on the flip side, because he does
exactly.
have a conservative background, who are holding their nose and don't want to vote for, which concerns me, though, because if Dems are taking the strategy of trying to bring in the Republicans who don't want to vote for Trump, where does that leave those of us on the other side? If we're trying to move over to make sure those people feel like they have a new home, where do we go? So I'll turn it over to y'all. But social media, those are all things that are buzzing on Twitter, especially Twitter right now. But Twitter, I don't get into Snapchat. We'll have to bring on a young kid one day to talk to us about Snapchat. But Twitter and Facebook are pretty much, I guess, you know, us older folks stay in the safe zone. Tumblr maybe, but yeah, so I'll turn it over to you guys now.
Well, we got a caller coming in. Yes, caller. Caller, you there?
I think the caller left, so if they want to come back in, they can come back in a later date. But I do want to follow up on the comment. Here are my thoughts about Kane and the charter school and going to the Black Catholic Church and, you know, braiding hair on the scoop. Here's the deal. It's no different than what Hillary is doing. It's the bottom line is it's appeasement. And I am highly critical as a Black woman of color about appeasement in the political sphere. And I tell you why. Because for me, it's like, let your voting record speak. You are a white man of privilege. We get that. We know that. We are intellectually tuned in enough to know that your life experiences do not match ours. However, you still have the potential to serve us. Okay, I get that. However, it's the fact that he speaks Spanish and his kids go through a black. Give me a break. Just give me a break. I mean,
if Spanish, speaking Spanish was a serious thing, then why don't we get somebody that's their native language? And be like,
hello,
oh, they can speak English.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like I'm
going to
get
really
a white man
someone
that can do everything that y'all can do. I'm going to bring a white man in to do it. And that was kind of
exactly.
my feeling at first. You know, it's like, again, the narrative that America keeps going over and over again into is that we need somebody white to do it for us.
Exactly.
Now, I don't have any problems with that. When they come in and they're respectful of our space, but the force upon us when you definitely have choices. We had a Cory Booker, we had the Castro brothers, we had Secretary Perez, we had people
mm-hmm.
who were prepared. Yeah, I would have took, if we were going to do two white people, you could have sent me Elizabeth Warren. Much as I did not want to, if I wanted Warren to stay in the Senate, you
right.
know, I wanted her to stay there, I would have accepted two women on the ticket better. But
you know,
here's where
I have to respectfully disagree with you, my brother. We need Elizabeth Warren to stay exactly where she is. I mean, one thing that I find myself going hoarse talking to people about, you have to make sure that your legislature is just as strong ideologically as your executive branch. And very
right.
often people are more concerned about the elected officials at the executive level, and they give nary a damn about what's going on at the legislative level. But then they want to talk about policy. Here's the deal. The president does not make policy. Policy is made at the legislative level, and I don't want to sort of, you know, derail, but I'm going to just Elizabeth Warren
well,
say right where she is. She needs to stay where she is. And I would have sacrificed Cory Booker because I think that he could have cultivated a strong candidate from New Jersey to come in and run for that seat. So that's my reason for that. However, I want to get back to the issue of appeasement. I mean, for me, that is like that's just something that I wish both he and Hillary and others who kind of employ this tactic would just stand up and be unapologetically white, Anglo-Saxon, male, female, liberal, progressive, and recognize that the racial injustices and the gender injustices are just really stank. And stay in that place and be okay. It's like a male feminist. They do exist. Those unicorns do exist.
Yeah, yeah, they do. They do. And I do agree with you on Warren staying in the Senate. That's what I was saying. I said I wouldn't have been hurt, but she needs to stay in the Senate. And when you talk about that, another one of those things I think that we've gone wrong with in the Democratic Party and that we've seen this in this pick is that we all recognize that all hell has broken loose over the last 8 years because of the fact that an African-American has been occupying the White House. We understand that the right has ever-loving lost their mind because of this. Let's just be honest about it. We have people who on the right who will come to your face and tell you this is what the problem is. But we want a Democrat to believe that, and we keep trying to comfort them and open a space for them that they don't want. They don't want to be over here. They don't want to be over here because there's too much diversity going over here. See, what we fail to understand is that diversity is only embraced in America when that diversity is Eurocentric. As long as we're diverse in Eurocentricity, it is okay. As long as I as a black man and you as a black woman of color and people of color, as long as we choose to assimilate ourselves into Eurocentric culture, that means straightening our hair, naming ourselves, giving ourselves Anglo names, and embracing Anglo culture, that's diversity. Whereas in the Democratic Party, diversity is we're going to speak Spanish even when we can speak English. We're going to embrace Muslims. And since we're going to embrace Muslims, Asians, and Jews, and we're going to have a multi-faith, multicultural lifestyle. We're going to embrace the dance and the music of other people. We're going to grow our hair That type of diversity scares the Eurocentricity of what most of America sees because they're not comfortable with it. People is not the end of the world. It is not the end of the world. It can't be if people don't understand there's a balance. And we as African Americans have never attempted to force our complete culture on anybody because we know what it feels like to have your culture destroyed. We would never do that to anybody because it means you down the path you don't want to go. And this is what this is about.
It's about a lot of things, and I don't want to sort of, you know, derail the conversation. I want to get back to the actual Democratic National Convention. But when we talk about cultural assimilation, embedded in that is a need for cultural competency and cultural sensitivity. So what I tend to see happen is that we have the assimilation part. If we'll look at some of the behaviors and mannerisms of black people and we'll adapt them. So we'll wear our hair in cornrows and beads and we will listen to Wu-Tang and, you know, and it just reminds me of a scene from Bamboozle, which I'm not going to repeat the words, but yes, I will. Enlighten us, oh great numerologist. And it was this idea that just because you have the face of majority, you have the position of power in our social structure, you now are the authority on a culture that doesn't even represent you. And I think that for a lot of black people and a lot of Latinx people, that's the core of the problem. But when we really need the advocacy of the minority, of the majority group, like, for instance, with Black Lives Matter, now it becomes a problem, and now they are nowhere to be found, and we can't get them at the table, and it's, well, that's your problem, not ours, fix it. And, you know, I just have no sorrow.
And see, that's where all this comes in and why it does fit into the conversation of the convention, because at this point, the convention is about unifying, and we still don't have everybody catching the idea that we can unify through diversity. I'm a Star Trek fan. I am a major Star Trek fan. And I've always loved the fact in Star Trek that Everybody, regardless of the fact they're wearing a Federation uniform, has something about them that lets you know, other than their facial features, that lets you know what race they belong to and their culture and whether or not it's embraced and loved by everybody. And if you're having a certain ritual, everybody participates. And if you can't participate, everybody respects that they can't participate. I mean,
wow.
That's me. That's the kind of thing that I've always looked toward. But speaking on that and segueing into the fact that, you know, the majority of this issue with the Democratic Party is being blamed on Debbie Wasserman Schultz. I know that I am so happy that I don't have to hear her speak next week.
Yeah. Can we talk about that for a second?
I would even happy.
It's time for her to move. But you know something I do want to really give a shout-out to? I mean, we can speak in nauseam about, you know, the appeasement of the Clinton-Cain ticket. And trust me, I will speak ad nauseum on my blog, on my Facebook page, The Legislative Empress. I will be throwing a major shade on that. But here's what I'll say as a preface. Let them have their song and dance. But I want to give a shout-out to our state legislators and our state officials that are representing, because Georgia is showing up at the DNC.
Yes. Let's talk about it.
So let's talk about that for a second.
Yes, let's talk about Georgia's role, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You there?
Do we still have our calls on the line, or did they drop off?
Hold on. Hold on. Let's see. Carl, are you there? You got anything to say, or are you just listening in?
No, I think he's just listening in. I think we're good.
Okay.
Now, you have some guests on. Did your guest leave?
That was Lenore, yes. Lenore left, yeah.
Okay, Lenore left. All right. So, basically, I definitely am excited that Leader Abrams is going to be a speaker at the DNC. I think Stacey Abrams has really maintained a leadership role in the Georgia House of Representatives, and it's really been a trailblazer as far as getting some bipartisan legislation passed. And I really want to talk a little bit about the role that our legislators are playing in the national spotlight. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, you know, my thoughts
besides
on
the fact, the fact that the picture of her was absolutely gorgeous. So I just have to, this is coming from a woman. It's coming from a woman. So there's nothing embedded in that. This is me saying, when I saw the picture, I said, you better slay Madam Leader. That was the first thing that came to my mind. So the picture of her that is being so is gorgeous. So Madam Leader, whatever you had happening, it works. So, okay, I'll stop.
I'm glad that Leader Abrams is getting a chance to speak. I have my criticisms of the House and the leader that are based on some legislation that passed within the last 2 years or so that nobody was ever really give me a good answer on. It was just basically I'm basically going back to the line redrawing back in 2013, I think it was. That there, and nobody could ever give me a good answer on that. Didn't like the way, because it actually kept us from being able to. We got a House seat that we're fighting for now that is a little bit more difficult for us to get hand a hold to than it was before they redrew those lines. So that kind of upset me. But other than that, and some other little things, you know, Georgia Project, stuff like that, I'm glad to see Georgia has a spot at the level, because they keep talking about us being a ground state. And if we're going to be a battleground state, then I need for them to go up there and set the stage for that to be such, for us to be able to go and show what Georgia has to offer. Now, I need for them to get those leaders that are in the legislature today to start cultivating who the people who are going to replace them. And we're not because
we... Now, that we can talk about, and that I really want to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, because what happens is that we are so concerned with our role on the national stage that we can't really take that seriously until we can take people that are in the legislature and move them up the statewide government, move them up the federal offices, and possibly even get them in positions where, when was the last time we had somebody from Georgia in the cabinet? Nobody looks at, oh, I need to get somebody from Georgia to sit a seat somewhere because we need Georgia. But see, Georgia, and one of the reasons it's not the case is because there's no bench here. You don't, you can't, the folks on the county commission are scared to move up to the state house. The folks in the state house are scared to move up to statewide. Statewide are scared to try to move in the federal. Yeah, guess what? Some of you are going to be called out of the doggone herd as you move upwards. But everybody needs to have ambition. Everybody needs to have the ambition to try to move upwards so that we can continue to cultivate down at the lower levels and keep the water is fresh when it keeps moving. If you don't allow water to move, it becomes stagnant, it becomes stale, it smells funny. And that's what my whole problem with Georgia smells funny right now, because the water don't flow.
So wait a minute, are you equating national politics with stale water?
Yes. I'm taking Georgia politics as being stale water.
Oh my God! Okay, you're afraid. That's what I meant to say. You're equating Georgia politics, so that's a smell I smell when I walk into the Capitol.
Yeah, it's
now I know.
More.
Now I know.
But there's
wow.
no movement. There's no movement. You see the same faces year after year until somebody gets indicted. Baby mama trips out on them. Something always you should never fall from power because you were taken down. You should have the know-it-all to know that your power is waning and leave on
exactly.
a good note. But that because when you fall from grace like that, you scare other people from coming in because they be like, "That's how I got to go out."
Yes.
I mean, because everybody comes in doing the same thing. So I'm hoping that as these leaders from Georgia go up and show these fresh faces, that these people catch the bug and continue to move forward. I need Leader Abrams to run for something. I need her to run for something at a higher level. I need her to do that because I need somebody from her district to be able to move in into that spot. I need for there to be a new leader because we don't have it. She done a great job. But if you're so good at what you do, I need you to go to a higher level and do it.
But, you know, the other thing, too, and it's funny, I know we're talking about the national convention, but you bring up a very interesting point about just incumbents in the state of Georgia. And as you and I have spoken in detail, we won't disclose any personal information. There are a couple right now with incumbents that have been there for over 10 years that there are currently candidates being cultivated to run against them.
Right.
And it is time for new blood. Sort of the sentiment that I'm hearing both at the local level, in the city councils and county commissioners races, at the state level, in the Georgia General Assembly, and at the national level in the Congress. So I think that is something that really needs to – that's a conversation that needs to continue throughout the different levels of government because there are people who make this a career. Being
right.
an elected official is not a career. It's not a career.
Yeah.
It's not a career. And part of that is, as you said, there's a natural ebb and flow in leadership. And at some point, you have to teach and cultivate and move on. And there are just people who can't do that because, well, ego. And there you have it.
We got another caller that I'm calling. Let's see if this caller wants to talk. Good afternoon, caller. Caller, well, they dropped off. Nobody wants
that's
to talk to us today. Okay,
they
listening.
Good, maybe they're listening because they're just mesmerized by the conversation. Sometimes people just can't get engaged because the conversation is just way too deep.
Well, but this is the thing, and this is one of the reasons why, you know, and people who listen to last Sunday show versus this Sunday show, we can't really, because of the nature of everybody's politics that is associated with this show, we can really never dig down as deep when it comes to conservative politics as we can with progressive politics because we live in this. We don't live with these conservative people.
We talk to them. We kind of know what they're doing, but we're not living their lives. So we can get a lot deeper into a democratic conversation because majority of our people are either leftist or Democrat. So
to some degree.
Yeah, to some degree.
To some degree. We got to be very careful about that.
I'm very excited about the fact that Jason Carter is speaking again, that he's speaking.
I was about to mention Jason Carter. So,
Now, I love me some Jason Carter. Now, I got into some Facebook stuff about him running again, and some people are like, no, I need Jason to run for governor again. I really do, because that's another problem that I think we have in the Democratic Party, particularly in Georgia, is that we let the wrong people run over and over and over and over and over again, and over and over and over again. But the right people.
We got people sitting in seats that are just there to write resolutions for their pastors. That's a problem.
Right. But we got folks like Jason Carter that, you know, we really need to be pushing and raising money for now. I don't care if it's a PAC that's raising money for him. I don't care. We need to get it ready now.
Jason Carter is, and I'll be honest, you know, I've had some not above board conversations about Jason Carter, very, very discreet with people who I trust and trust me. And what I'll say is that there isn't love all the way around. And I think that, you know, there are some image issues that he's going to have to address before he really gets the full progressive vote. He will get the affluent liberal vote. The progressive vote, that's going to be difficult.
Yeah, because, you know, there are some of us that are upset about the guns, his stuff on guns and stuff like that. And he does come across, as I've heard it, you know, as an urban elitist. He doesn't seem like he's comfortable in the rural setting. I disagree with that because I watched him face close in LaGrange, Georgia when he came down there, and he seemed to get along good with us. I don't see him in Plains. He seemed to get along good with the folks down in Sumter. So my question is, if he's not getting along in rural Georgia, what part of that, only place I can see him having a problem would be like extreme South Georgia and some areas in North Georgia. Because those are the places that really, when you talk about the Democratic Party, those folks are different. They are different. They get Democrats, but they're different.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're so far removed from the things that take place in the larger cities. So when you talk about the places like Columbus and Macon and Athens, you got a different thing going on because all of these places are so close to Atlanta that there is some residual effects that take place that makes our politics a little bit different. But then the further you get away from Atlanta or the harder it is to access Atlanta, then you have a difference in political environments. You know, being a Democrat in Waycross is a lot different than being a Democrat in Manchester, Georgia.
Understood. So here's what I want to do, because I know we're running short and we're about to wrap up. So I'm going to do this, getting back to the DNC. The DNC, as you all know, is in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Okay, Philadelphia is my second home. I lived there for about 10 years when I did grad school there. And I just want to give you guys some tips on where to get some good food because everyone wants cheesesteaks. So I'm going to give you the cheesesteak lowdown. Where do you not go to get cheesesteaks? Pat and Gino's. And why is that? Because the best cheesesteaks are going to be in the city. You find somebody who's a native, and let them take you to West Philly and get you a cheesesteak, and your entire life will be gotten. In addition, learn Wawa. Wawa is the Starbucks in heaven of Philadelphia. So you need to know Wawa, and you need to know one of their cheesesteaks. You got to get it. You know what? Wawa coffee has, like, some committing homicide before. I mean, I don't know what they put in it. But Wawa coffee will just make your entire life happy. And the best cheesesteaks, unfortunately, sorry, Tatagino, they are in the city. And I'm not endorsing anyone, but I would say go to West Philadelphia. So hop on the market, friend for mine. Find you a friend. You might want to exercise your open carry permit, but you can in the city of Philadelphia, by the way. And go and enjoy yourself. Philadelphia is an amazing city. I would be there this week. and just enjoy yourself. It's an amazing city of amazing people.
Okay, okay. That is.
I will take you to Philadelphia, Scout.
I'm going
to take you to Philly and buy you a cheesesteak. How about that? I'm going to take you to Philly and buy you a cheesesteak. You will love it forever.
Okay. All right. Now, I've gotten, you know, now I was hearing this Pat and Gino's argument on television earlier, so don't fall into that hype, because they were telling
don't
us that's like,
the hype.
That's like the two hot spots
it's
for
like
the cheese.
It's like McDonald's and Burger King. Like McDonald's and Burger King. When what you really want is a burger from Vortex. Okay?
Okay, okay,
like,
I got
no.
you.
Don't,
I
even,
got
don't
you.
Fall into the hype. And I'm actually going to blog about that today. Don't fall into that Pat Gino hype. If you want a good cheesesteak, I will give you a name of someone named Buddy, and he will pick you up down at the convention center and take you to West Philly and get you a cheesesteak that was your entire life. And it's stop by Wawa and get you a cup of coffee.
Okay, so I don't got –
Right, and if you want to run up the art museum stairs in 90-degree weather, God bless you.
That's what's up. That's what's up. So before we go, I want you to give me your take on what you think the differences are going to be from the RNC last week and the DNC this week. What's going to be called? What you think is going to be the tenor of the convention?
Oh Jesus. Well, I think the difference is that candidate Clinton will not show up every night and make cameo appearances. Extremely odd that Donald Trump did that. I've never known a candidate to do that, and I would hope that she doesn't do that. In addition, I think that the speakers are going to be more policy-focused and less ideologically focused. And
are we going to have a parade of white people?
No,
you
there's
know,
not going to be a parade
Trump,
of white things.
During the Trump convention, you know, we had these tokens.
Parade of Negroes?
Yeah, a token of melanated people. I'm not going to say they were all Negroes, but they were melanated people.
The melanated people. Oh, yeah. Well, I think there's enough diversity there. It's going to be like a mosaic of people. But I think it's going to be a whole lot of appropriation. A whole lot of trying to be down. A whole lot of white people speaking Spanish. It's gonna be humor. It's gonna be a bunch of people doing too much. I think that's gonna happen. But I also think that there are gonna be some state delegations that are not going to go for Hillary. That's what I want to watch out for. And I have.
The thing is, the 43% of the delegates are for Bernie. So yeah, I'm waiting for that point in which they show. Are they going to show their hands on the floor?
And that's the other thing I want to talk about
really quick before we go is that there was a vote taken in Rules Committee about actually trying to reduce the number of superdelegates in the next cycle.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. They're done with it. Because the superdelegates, unfortunately, can be bought and sold, and that's the problem. And their influence is too great. Now, speaking of superdelegates, I actually spoke with a superdelegate out of maybe I shouldn't disclose the state, but it's one of our more western northern states, might or might not be continental, but I'll leave it at that. And I believe that you're going to see some surprises out of that state, and they're not exactly happy for Hillary. So that's what I think, besides the appropriation and just everything that's going on, I think we're going to see splitting delegates between Bernie and Hillary than we saw in the RNC.
Okay. That's all good in the hood. That is good in the hood. So I got one more caller that looked like they were attempting to call back in because we dropped them as I was trying to go get them. I don't think it's the one that you was pointing out to me, so hold on one second. Yes, caller.
Hey, Scout Smith, this is Kimberly Carter. I was having some issues with listening online because I'm out here on some country roads. I'm actually out here delivering little cash packages to people going to Philly tomorrow. So showing some love to our delegation that's leaving tomorrow. So I couldn't hear online, so I was just listening on the phone.
Okay.
So,
see, this is what I'm talking about, loyalty. You listen online, so you got on the phone. That's what I'm talking about.
That's right. That's right. We should all be highly vested in supporting the creative projects, the economic projects of any of our friends. We should be highly vested in doing so and in trying to make sure that in whatever corner our friends want to brighten, that we show up to add even more illumination to that corner. So,
well, I appreciate you illuminating me, and I will be over there to illuminate y'all over there in policy.
Well, you know, we love you. We love you, Scout. But I did want to make just one comment about the light that is shining on all of the dysfunctions with these political parties, the whole WikiLeaks, all of that. We have been talking about this for the past 2 months, you and I and Kenyette and Stacy and John, all of us have been talking about these systemic issues that we are seeing that are part of the dysfunction of why we don't win. And now people who may have thought us to be crazy or thought that we were haters can now see for themselves. It's nothing wrong with our eyes or our brains or our minds, but we see truth. And that the truth of the matter is there is no strategy other than internal strategy to shut down our folks who are bold enough and courageous enough to say, these are not the issues we should be fighting for or the people we should be fighting for.
All right. I hear you. And you know what I'll tell you is there are a couple of Bernie delegates in other states that are unapologetically not definitely going to be live tweeting and live Facebooking about. It's just the delegate count because this is going to come down to the wire. It's not over.
Right now, we have people who are not only Bernie supporters, but people who are standing up for the issues that have not been addressed in the platform of the party or in the platform of Secretary Clinton and Senator Kaine, who are almost shutting down Philly right now. I'm talking about thousands of people. The last picture that I saw, it was almost five city blocks.
That was the next point I was going to make. That was a plan I was going to make. A friend of mine in Philadelphia and my son lives in Philadelphia, and they both have concurred that there are a ton of protesters out there. And these are not counter-party protesters. These are intra-party protesters. So I think this is going to be a very spirited convention. To get back to your original question, Scout, what's going to be the difference? I think it's going to be very spirited. I think it's going to really come down to the wire. And there's going to be some bruised feelings when this is all over. This is going to be a Pyrrhic victory. She's not going to get this easily.
And I think that she'll be okay with that, because we're talking about a woman who has literally spent her life in some type of fight, one way or the other. So I don't want people to think because I heard Senator Warren say the other day, I like women who fight back, and guess what, I do too. And, you know, regardless of what people may think of Secretary Clinton on one point or the other, one thing that I do like about the Hill is that she's not afraid of a fight, and she is learning how to address challenges. Because if you've been in this fight for so long, you've been attacked for so long, you sort of stay on the defense. And so I think sometimes when we've seen her in some of these moments where she wasn't handling it too well, it's because she's always had to be on the defense, right? So I think that this is going to be good for her, good for Tim. I think it's good for everybody to feel this pressure and to understand that we are tired of being a checkbox. We're tired of being okey-doke and taken for granted, that there are some things in this nation
has
to be addressed. And I just want y'all to put me on hold because I just want to just finish listening so I don't have to try to go online. But the last thing I noticed that a young man posted today something about he's going to be leading the I guess he's going to be over the coordinated campaign, and so I almost can't wait. I'm sitting on pins and needles. I almost can't wait to see what Christine reads when he sees
who. Oh, boy.
Who is going to be leading the charge in Georgia? And that's all the shade I'm going to throw today. Love both of you. Keep doing what you're doing.
Love
you're
you
making
too, dear.
Love you.
We try. All right,
well,
folks, this was interesting. This is it.
Good, folks. We're going to go ahead and we're going to shut it down today. You know, y'all probably like, whoa. We don't hit everything today that we had on our little list. And, you know, like they used to tell you in church when it's time to get up and talk, when you get up and talk, get up, say what you got to say, sit down. We don't got up. We don't sit down. We don't even pass the plate. No time for our A&B selection. We're going to set it down. So with all that being said, this is Down South and Dirty, y'all, and we out. Peace.
We out. Peace.